Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
First this morning, though, Norma Foley, Minister for Children, Disability and Equality. Good morning to you. And
morning,
thank you
Claire.
For coming in this morning. We'll start with Children's Health Ireland. The Minister for Health, your colleague Jennifer Carroll McNeill, has said she's going to reappoint the members of the CHI board following the four in total resignations that we've had now. Should she do that, do you believe, or should it just be subsumed back into the HSE, which is another suggestion?
I think in the first instance, I think all of society really has been shocked and appalled by what has come into the public domain in the last while. And also, I don't for one minute underestimate the incredible trauma really that's been visited on parents and families in terms of what's now in the public domain. However, the minister is correct. I think we need to have stability. There have been a number of resignations. She's also taking the advice of the Attorney General in terms of governance and, you know, what opportunities there might be there going forward, maybe to change the system that's there. But that's a body of work. And equally so in terms of, we'd say, the hip dysplasia and the again, the information in the public domain there. She is setting up an external review of each one of those cases so that parents would have confidence of, I suppose, really in relation to what's happening in relation to their own children. So there's a number of initiatives being taken by the minister, but overall, it's to ensure in the first instance that children are getting the care that they should get, that parents have confidence that there's an expert external review of that type of care, and secondly, in terms of governance, she's taking further advice from the Attorney General.
Because the governance one is really perplexing. When you've
absolutely
Bernard Gloucester, the head of the HSE, not knowing about that issue that was reported in the Sunday Times about the consultant who was referring to his own private list and the delays that that caused for people. And he also mentioned that Garda involvement might be needed in situations like that. It's just extraordinary that he wouldn't have known about a report that was commissioned by the CHI on that issue until it was in the Sunday Times.
Oh, it's absolutely shocking, I would say. It's absolutely shocking that element of accountability seems to be not in evidence. Indeed, an internal report, which I obviously haven't seen, the minister wasn't made aware of it. As you said, Mr. Gloucester not aware of it. So there needs to be an entire root and branch, I think, in terms of governance, because if there isn't confidence around governance, there isn't confidence around what's being delivered in the service either.
Well, that's why I asked whether the CHI should continue to exist or whether it should be subsumed into the HSE, because this is a really vulnerable section of society. And, you know, not being overseen properly, it would seem now. I think it's fair to say that by the HSE, it's incomprehensible.
Yeah, and again, I'm not going to preempt the minister. The minister has said that she is an absolute, you know, open mind as regards in the long term what will happen in terms of perhaps it will be the HSE that will take it over. Perhaps there's other opportunities. I do think from a legal point of view, she's quite correct to take the advice of the Attorney General here to see what options are open to her. But I'm 100% convinced, you know, government are very clear indeed, as is the minister, that a root and branch to be done here, a system put in place where there is accountability, where parents and families and children indeed can have confidence in what's being offered. It's utterly unacceptable. And indeed, it's worrying what has transpired in the last number of days.
Well, let's talk about the most vulnerable children now in Ireland, children who are in care or who need to be in care, and how the state is failing those in the most serious way. So 2 years ago, we had the head of TUSLA saying that that agency is in crisis. Moving on from that point, then we have the High Court Judge John Jordan last week saying he's tired of the excuses and the platitudes from TUSLA about their failure to provide beds for these children. Children are suffering, and it is known that they are suffering. Like it's like this judge is shouting into the wind, but you surely can't ignore that any longer.
No, and I want to be very clear where, you know, it's not being ignored. Take TUSLA as it stands. Significant funding, over €1 billion in funding, is given to TUSLA to do the job of work that they need to do. In terms of children in care, there are approximately 5,800 children in care. The vast, vast majority of those children are actually in foster care, more than 90% of them. And I want to acknowledge the great, great work of those who provide that foster care, because I think it's the ideal scenario. And then there's about 8% that are in residential care. and 0.2% that are in the special care that you refer to. And they are very, very vulnerable young people. We have
and the state is failing them. I mean, it's clear from what the judge is saying. He's saying this dysfunctional system is getting worse.
And so just to explain how that system actually operates, there are special care is meant to be a short term measure for children who are a danger to themselves or to others. Their liberty is deprived, you know, and they're kept in a very, high maintenance oversight of them. There are 26 beds available for that type of care. 14 of those beds are available at the minute because of staffing issues. And there are two, you're quite correct, where there are court orders seeking an additional two beds to be manned. The problem is not finance. The problem is not the availability of the beds. The problem is actually the staffing. And so to get over that, what has two key things have been done. A new pay grade and a new category has been introduced for those special care workers with a significant uplift in remuneration for that position, because it is not and has not proven to be an attractive, a career path for many people. I would be the first to say it is very, very challenging. It's very, very difficult, but it's very, very important work. And secondly, again, in an effort to recruit more people into that, there has been an international recruitment, which is actually going very well, that was launched recently, going very well. And Thusler are confident that they will be in a position to bring more and more people in from abroad in relation to it. So I absolutely accept that there have been challenges here, that young people who should be placed in special care, there are two in particular at this point in time, are not in that special care setup at the minute, but alternative arrangements have been made for them in the interim.
Going back to what you said there about the pay and the uplift being agreed, because Tusla had previously asked for that uplift and the government refused. So when was that approved?
That was just in the recent months. I agree. You know, it's a department can't sanction, an increase in pay or a particular pay grade or whatever. That is a subject of negotiation with the Department of Public Expenditure. And so there was, extensive engagement to get that over the line. I'm pleased to say that we now have it over the line.
Does that have a knock on for other people working in the care area then, that increase?
Well, again, this is a specific category to deal with special care, and special care is very distinctive to other types of care within the system. Again, I'll say to you, it's for extremely, extremely vulnerable young people who need in at all times there will be a one-to-one provision of staff for them. It's very, very demanding in terms of staff availability.
Well, these are children who are in grave danger from others or from themselves.
Well, primarily they are a danger to themselves or they are a danger to others.
But some of them are in danger, and we know that from a recent High Court case where we know that one child who wasn't provided with a bed, despite a bed being ordered for that child, was the victim of sexual assault. And that's how dangerous this situation is for those children.
Look, I absolutely would concede these children and young people are extremely vulnerable. There's absolutely no doubt about that.
So have you been told by Thusla now that this change in the pay grade will result in all 26 beds being available?
Well, again, there is obviously the difficulty with attracting staff into this particular area of work. So, Thusla, to be fair, haven't just gone down one pathway in relation to that in terms of introducing the particular grade and making the enhanced funding available. They've also sought to recruit abroad and recruit everywhere, but including recruiting abroad. And they are confident it will lead to an increase. It won't happen overnight. I regret to say that. I wish it could. But there are distinct challenges in attracting people into this area of work. But I think, the more we do in this area of work, the more we support those who are providing the work. Excellent individuals who are providing this work, but I don't underestimate the challenge it provides for them. But at the end of the day, we must protect, as you have said, the most vulnerable of children in this instance.
Whose only crime is to be born into a desperate situation.
Absolutely agreed.
If this doesn't work, though, what's the alternative? Or do you know of an alternative? If this is so difficult to fix because the staffing problem is so hard to solve, what do you do?
Well, again, I suppose I'd have to say to you that we are confident that it is moving in the right direction in terms of staffing. So, but again, not suggesting, as I said, that it'll happen overnight, but it is moving in the right direction. There are other opportunities that we may look at. For example, there are three such facilities across the country. Perhaps there's an opportunity, and we are looking at this. I'm not saying this is what will be finally decided, but perhaps maybe to coalesce all three. Maybe there should be one dedicated special care facility being made available. That's something we will look at as well. But in the interim, the most important priority is to ensure that we have that additional staffing for the beds that are required.
Right. Just on these children as well, there's no school policy for these children. As a former Minister for Education, that's something surely that you would want to address.
No, but again, I would want to say that there is great work being done via our ETBs, the Education and Training Boards, in terms of the provision of education in these centres, and it is being made available. And I suppose I would say that, you know, the staffing ratio would be very good and resources are made available. So
you're saying there is a school policy.
Education is being provided.
Because experts have been calling for about 12 years, including the Children's Ombudsman, for changes to be made in that area in terms of education for children in care. But you're saying that it's
well,
not an
no,
issue.
No, I'm saying, look, I would never for 1 minute suggest that everything is perfect and everything is ideal. But I am saying that education is being provided. Mm-hmm. There are always opportunities to do things differently and to, you know, to add to what has been offered. But, you know, I am saying that education is being provided.
Assessment of need, of course, has been very much in the headlines. We know by the end of this year there'll be about 25,000 children on those lists. That's what the expectation is, waiting for assessment. What are you planning to do to help those families?
Yeah, currently there are 15,000 young people awaiting the assessment of need. And I have been very honest to say it is my personal view that the system that we have in place at the moment isn't working. It's not serving the children who need the service, and it's certainly not serving the families. I think the focus has been on going through the assessment of need process, which can be very long and convoluted process. For many, it can take 36 hours. For others, it can take 96 hours. And the point that is made to me repeatedly by parents, really, is that one other thing I should say, I suppose, really, is that at the end of that process, more than one third of those children or young people are assessed not to have a disability. They have a need, but not a disability. And what parents have said to me consistently is that the need of my child can be very obvious from the beginning. It could be speech and language. It could be whatever it is, but it could be obvious from the beginning. It is my view what we need to do is we need to focus on the need from the beginning rather than the end of the process. And it is my intention to ensure that there will always be the opportunity for parents to access the assessment of need if that's what they wish, but that in the interim that a greater focus would be put on the provision of a service for an identified need at the start. One other thing I'd have to say to you is that one third of our, we'd say the therapists who are doing the work, one third of their time is spent on administration. Mm-hmm. That needs to be changed.
So they can't provide the service.
And the last thing I would say, I suppose really, we found that in and around 36% of those who go through the process are diagnosed with an autism need. I think there needs to be a different pathway, that if that's the you know, if that's what the clinicians, their view from the beginning, or the view of parents from the beginning, that they are more than likely seeking an autism diagnosis, a separate pathway should be found for that. And I am pleased to say that the HSE are working on that currently, and they're engaging in consultation around that and what that might look like. Mm. And so to have the right pathway, you know, for the child at any given time.
You outlined there that, you know, you might need to go through the full assessment of need to access the service that your child requires.
But I would never withdraw the opportunity.
Do that in parallel. But does that need legislative change to do that?
Yeah, perhaps it will. You know, I'm in discussion now with the Attorney General in relation to that, and perhaps it will. But I think at the end of the day, and I meet parents all of the time, and really what they're looking for is access to therapy. And they're looking for immediacy in terms of that access. And I think the process of, in many instances, going through it for 96 hours is not serving them. Mm-hmm. You know, and at the end of that 96 hours, then they get a statement that says, this is what you should get, A, B and C. And oftentimes, that's not available either. So more than that, what we need to do also is to ensure that we have enough therapists coming out. So in the programme for government, there is a doubling of the number of places for speech and language therapists, physiotherapists, occupational therapists. There's an additional 120 places that have been made available in Northern Ireland in conjunction and agreement with ourselves here to provide professionals coming through so that we will have a pipeline. And we're also looking at roles like assistant therapists who can support the work.
Yeah, I mean, these all sound like medium to long term solutions. Like, they're not going to help the family that didn't sleep last night or who have no money at the end of the week because they've had to pay for services privately.
Yeah, and I accept that. And I think, you know, government has been very clear. Taoiseach has been very clear. He has a dedicated office within his own office of an Taoiseach now dedicated to disability and moving ahead with the resources for disability and ensuring that it is a government priority. In terms of parents who are lying awake at night, I know they are. And I also want to acknowledge oftentimes people who come to me in my own constituency, oftentimes it's the grandparents, because the parents are so caught up in ensuring and looking after and minding their child that oftentimes the advocate has to be the grandparent or extended family members in conjunction with the parents. So for the parents, what I'm saying is, it is my absolute determination that at an earlier point, when a need is identified, you will get access to the therapy.
Yeah, because
to
the
do that,
assessment
I need
of
to,
need yeah. means if you don't go through that process, the gate is locked to you, isn't it, in terms of accessing services?
But you see, and that's another point that has been made consistently to me, that if you don't have an assessment of need, you don't get anything. And that's actually not true. You don't need an assessment of need to access, health supports from, you know, from primary care, from the disability network teams, from mental health services or whatever. But you do need it for, I absolutely know you do need it for some things. And then there's also, and I've said this previously and I want to be clear in how I'm saying it, that there can be misinformation around, you know, where it is required. Mm-hmm. So I find it unacceptable that whilst it might not be a requirement for housing, but it is referenced to those who apply for housing and it is said to them on occasion, it would be helpful if you had this assessment of need, if you were looking for housing with a disability aspect to it. It's not written down as a requirement, but it is absolutely, I know it from my own dealings on the ground. It is suggested it would be helpful. Equally so in terms of domiciliary care, there was a section in the form where you could put in the assessment of need, you know, if you had it. Mm-hmm. That won't be there anymore going forward. So I think across government, we need to be very clear. Where an assessment of need is not required, you shouldn't ask people or you shouldn't suggest to people that it might be helpful if you had it anyway. So cross government, there needs to be a body of work. There needs to be a focus on delivering therapies at the earliest point when the need, mm-hmm. when the need is identified. And we also need to ensure that we'd say therapists who are working in that field, that one third of their time being spent in administration, we need to find a different way.
Okay.
And
so
therefore, perhaps the assistant therapists, can come in and support there as well.
I think that people might be concerned if there will be less weight attached to the assessment of need. Mm-hmm. I mean, Mary Lou McDonald did make the point that there'll be serious and enduring consequences if the 6-month requirement to provide the assessment of need, if the legislation around that is changed. Do you accept that people might be concerned that you change the law around it and nothing else happens?
No, I think really what people want is they want faster access to therapies. That's what's made very clear to me. And what we're trying to do here is to streamline the process to ensure that they get faster access to therapy. I will not withdraw the right to have the assessment of need. Mm-hmm. That will always be there. The AON will always be there. But in the interim, you know, in the interim, services should be available as well. And that's the most significant stumbling block for parents as it stands. Uh-huh. The services aren't available.
Okay, and we're coming up to the end, but I want to ask you about childcare. We were talking about it on the programme yesterday, that mm-hmm. government commitment to provide childcare at €200 a month mm-hmm. for families. How far away is that?
Well, we've given the commitment and it's a clear commitment that it will be done over the lifetime of government. In the interim, I can say to you, over the last number of years since we brought in, state funding going directly to providers, we have seen on average a 50% reduction in the cost of childcare, but it's still far too high. So
and not accessible, which is a huge problem.
Absolutely. So in terms of it still being too costly, because that's a problem for parents, come this September, I will be introducing a fee cap, and that will particularly help parents who are paying particularly high fees for childcare. In terms of accessibility, I'm very conscious of that. So we've also given a commitment that we will increase the number of places. Just last week, I announced funding of €25 million, which is providing 1,500 additional places. But we need to do much more. And we've given a commitment that the state will intervene where there isn't a provision of service. But to do that, I want to recognise we do that alongside the private provision. We're committed over the next number of years, between now and 2030, we envisage that 14,000 additional places will be required. Every year, we will make additional places available, either through supporting private providers or the state intervening itself. And the other point I want to make as well, you know, all these things are interconnected. We need the places. We need the staff in place. I've made €45 million available so that there will be an increase in wages, if you like, for staff. That is before the Joint Labour Committee.
Because they're not paid enough.
I absolutely agree.
£13.70, I think, is what they can expect to be paid.
I fundamentally agree with you there. I want to be very clear and say that the Joint Labour Committee is independent of me, and I respect that. But I also want to say, for the record, I've put €45 million on the table. I have met with the membership of the Joint Labour Committee. I've made it very clear that I want every single last penny of that spent on wages. They deserve the uplift. We want professionals. We want the best of people caring for children in early learning and childcare provision. To do that, they need to be paid. And that's and to keep them, we need to do that as well. So I respect the independent decision, but I'm careful to say as well that I have put the money on the table. So it's about reducing costs for parents. Mm-hmm. It's about ensuring that there are more places available. It's about ensuring that staff are paid proportionately and appropriately for the excellent work that they do. And equally, it's ensuring that there is enough money coming forward from government. Just over the last, since state funding was introduced, more than €1.3 billion has been invested by the state to ensure that there's greater access, that there's greater provision of early learning and childcare. And we will continue on that journey.
Minister, we'll leave it there. Thank you very much for coming in. Minister Norma Foley, we'll take a break back after this.
Text 51551 today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.